From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Berkeley.
Berkeley, California.
Right north of the LeConte Street.
Coming up, we consider the options San Francisco has for eliminating all of its waste.
You know, keeping food out of compost and donating it to feed hungry people.
Right.
Is way more and better than turning it into dirt.
An update on the Zero Waste 2020 initiative. Then we'll learn what it takes to preserve open space on the peninsula and what it means for the people who live there.
A remarkable thing to be able to have. It's like having your backyard be hundreds of thousands of acres.
And we'll reveal the answer to this week's audiograph mystery sound. What's that? Find out today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. San Francisco has a plan to eliminate all of its garbage by the end of the decade.
The goal ultimately is zero waste by 2020, and we think that's an achievable goal.
That was former San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom promoting the goal of zero waste back in 2009. It's an official resolution passed back in the Willie Brown administration. Now in 2014, Mayor Ed Lee claims the city has reached 80% of that goal. Some critics don't think we're even that far along yet. Either way, it's going to take a lot to finish the job and get to zero waste. KALW's Adam Teitelbaum has the story.
Every morning in San Francisco's neighborhoods, you can hear Ecology's big white trucks drive slowly down city streets, stopping at every house along the way. They're picking up the contents of those multicolored trash bins, blue bins for recycling, green bins for composting, and black bins for landfill. The blue bin contents, paper, bottles, cans, and plastics, 600 tons of it go every day to Recycle Central at Pier 96, where it gets sorted by Recology personnel. The green bins provide another 600 tons per day. Those compostables go to the Organics Annex across from Candlestick Park, where yard waste and food scraps are sorted, then trucked to the city's composting facilities. The material in the black bins, well, that goes to the landfill. And as we approach the goal of zero waste by 2020, it's the contents of those black bins that will have to shrink dramatically. Alexa Kelty works at the San Francisco Department of the Environment. She says that what we need to shrink right now are clothes.
So a lot of our nonprofit reuse centers like Goodwill and Salvation Army are overwhelmed and they can't take everything. They're basically maxed out. There's only so much that you can resell here within San Francisco.
And that's just the rewearable stuff. She says 4,500 pounds of textiles, including clothes and shoes, are thrown away in San Francisco every hour.
So that's why we're expanding the initiative to take a wider range of materials.
Including threadbare clothes that were once headed for the landfill. They can now be dropped off at some San Francisco retailers.
Customers, they can come into our store and they can recycle any of their old clothes instead of throwing them in their garbage.
Alicia Brown is a manager at the American Eagle store in downtown San Francisco's Westfield Mall. The store gives a 15% discount to customers who drop off clothes for recycling.
The recycling bin is located next to our cash register, and all you have to do is place your recycled clothes into the bin and then just let a sales associate know that you recycled your clothes so that you're able to get your 15% off.
Our goal around the world is to collect clothing, shoes, and other textiles to never hit our landfill and have an endless use.
Jennifer Gilbert is the chief marketing officer of ICO, an international clothing recycler partnering with the city and retailers. When their collection bins are full, all items are sorted and graded in Fresno and Los Angeles. The wearable items are then resold. The really beat-down rags are repurposed as furniture padding and soundproofing materials.
Our goal is closed loop. Our goal is to be able to spin that and create new clothing. That is really the cradle-to-cradle philosophy, not cradle-to-grave.
So fabric is one of the big fronts in San Francisco's Zero Waste Initiative. Another is food. Robert Reed is Recology's PR manager.
And in San Francisco, we're collecting 600 tons a day of food scraps and clams. That's a tremendous amount.
San Francisco generates compost from that waste, selling some to vineyards and giving some to residents. But about 10% of what we put in the green bins actually ends up in the landfill. Larger pieces of organic material that don't fit through Recology's processing screens are spread over the landfill as something called alternative daily cover. While some environmental groups don't think this should be considered diverted, it is legally. And Recology's Reed says,
it's the most advanced compost collection program in North America.
But in some ways, that's too much. In the U.S., about 40% of our edible food is wasted. And Alexa Kelty of SF Environment says it's the single largest category of unreclaimed waste in San Francisco.
So we need to basically educate people that we shouldn't be sending edible food to the landfill and redistribute it through the many outlets we have in San Francisco. There's over 100 food pantries that could be receiving this stuff.
Thank you.
You know what kind of food it is?
Nancy Kusari from Food Runners has just picked up some catered food from a tech company by the baseball stadium.
They'll be like roasted. I know that they'll be, one time it was Mexican food because some of it spilled in my car. Whole thing's a guacamole.
Where are we going to drop off today?
We're going to 5th and Bryant, which is St. Vincent de Paul.
Okay.
There's 8 trays of veggies, salad, and grilled chicken, and the charity is happy to take it.
Do you cook here?
Yeah, I cook.
So do you get a lot of food from Food Runners every day?
Yeah, you have food, yeah. Every day, okay. Donation, Sunday, Monday, Friday, every day.
Food Runners' 250 volunteers in San Francisco collect prepared foods, fruits, and vegetables from farmers markets, restaurants, caterers, and supermarkets. They deliver to shelters and soup kitchens, as well as public schools and neighborhood rec centers. Director Mary Risley says they can do more and wants the city to provide incentives.
The Recology people now are currently giving credit for composting rather than garbaging. So you get a credit off your garbage bill. I think they should be giving credit for donating. Keeping food out of compost and donating it to feed hungry people is way more and better than turning it into dirt.
San Francisco is still hoping to stop contributing to its landfills by 2020. As it gets closer to the deadline, however, the climb becomes steeper, and it will require more outside-of-the-bin thinking to get there. In San Francisco, I'm Adam Teitelbaum for Cross Currents.
How do you try to reduce the amount of waste you generate? Share your tips with us on our Facebook page, KALW. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Getting to zero waste may be a challenge, and nowadays, another environmental challenge is preserving our area's parks, nature reserves, shorelines, and other open spaces. With redevelopment happening in places like San Francisco's Hunters Point waterfront and Oakland's new Brooklyn Basin project along the shoreline, it can look like a lot of our natural landscape will turn into shiny residential towers. But on the peninsula, a different story. Last month, Measure AA was passed there by a 2/3 majority. It's a $300 million bond measure that will help the Mid-Peninsula Regional Open Space District to preserve more of its parks and natural trails. The district works with groups like Peninsula Open Space Trust, or POST, which buys open spaces and preserves them in perpetuity. Spaces like the Arrastradero Preserve in Palo Alto. That's where I met POST's president, Walter Moore, to tell me how preservation works there and what it means for the area. So we laced up and took a hike.
We're now walking along Arrastradero Road, and we're looking down into a lovely valley area where about a decade ago, a woman named Evelyn Bresler, actually it's more like 2 decades ago, had a home that burnt down. And she spent a long, long time trying to see if she could rebuild, but finally went bankrupt. And so Post was fortunate enough to be able to step in that bankruptcy and make the highest bid and acquire this 13 acres, which for your listeners is in the absolute center of one part of the preserve. And so this land, had we not protected it, would have completely disrupted the whole entry area to the preserve, and you would have had a massive luxury home that only you can have on Silicon Valley that would have been, you know, probably 8 to 10,000 square feet, single family residence. Instead, you now have what we're walking over to, which is a lovely open grass area, which has amazing habitat. I saw the largest rattlesnake I've ever seen in this area.
No!
Not that you want to get near it. And don't worry, we won't probably not encounter ones as we go along the trail. So be careful as you walk across here. So we're crossing Arrachadero Road. We've protected over 73,000 acres since 1977 in this area. And as you know, this is not a cheap area in which to acquire and protect land.
So I was going to ask you that. Yeah. This is prime real estate. Yeah. How much is this land worth?
So the lands we purchase can range from, and I'm glad we're not walking near any cliffs so you don't fall over as I say this, but from $1 million an acre all the way down to $10,000 an acre, depending on the size. So a multi-thousand acre property can be in the tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh, my.
An acre.
Per acre.
So for example, we acquired over an 8,500 acre property for $30 million. So you get a lower per average cost.
Here is a question. Yeah. When you say we bought the land, with what money? Whose money?
So our funding comes from a combination of private individuals, foundations, and public agencies. And typically our campaigns have been roughly half foundations, half public agencies, and the rest private individuals whose gifts can range from, $5 to $10 million.
And so tell me more about the story of preserving this preserve in particular. Was it back in the 2000s,
yes.
The early 2000s?
Yes. And another interesting thing about that purchase was it wasn't too long after that. The city of Palo Alto has done a very good job of protecting some of the lands in the hills. We're in the hills above Palo Alto proper, the town of Palo Alto, but it's all within the city limits of Palo Alto. Well, there's another property called Foothills Park that's also city-owned that the town bought, I think it was in the 60s, and they asked the surrounding towns, would you come in with us to help protect this land? And they all said no. And so the city said, well, we're paying for this whole thing, so we're going to do it for our citizens, and it's only going to be available to them. And so people were frustrated because in later times, they didn't realize that this history, and they thought it was inappropriate for the city to block other people from coming in the park. But if you hear that history and story, you know why. Well, it turned out that later they asked the California Coastal Conservancy for funding for this project to help pay. The city was to pay Post part of the cost back for purchasing the Bressler property to protect it.
Oh, wow.
And the Coastal Conservancy said, yes, we'll participate in that, but we want you to allow the general public at least to be able to walk in through the Arrachadero property up through the Foothill property. So now it is actually open. You can't drive in, but at least you can walk in through the property.
Like we're doing right now.
Yeah.
So there is public access now.
Yes.
If not for, your work, what would this place be today?
Well, we're surrounded by very good examples of it. When you drove in, are you okay hiking up a bit?
Yeah.
Because it goes up a bit, and then we can either circle around one way or the other way. So on either side of the preserve are examples of what it would have been. And those are large luxury homes that are spread across the landscape. And they're actually... you can probably come up ahead.
Ooh, some.
I'll just pause for a second.
Can you tell me what we're
horse
encountering
parky.
Here?
Just the some horses have been through and left evidence of themselves
yes,
here.
Yes, let's walk around that. Uh-huh.
But what happens in a lot of where you have the urban-rural boundaries is you have what's called sprawl or houses that are not built in an efficient manner where they're close together and of a certain size. These are larger homes that are more have much more greater energy demands. They don't really serve a large residential population because they're just big homes on very big lots. And they absolutely destroy the a large landscape because of the amount of room and space they're taking up. And so on either side of the preserve are examples of that. So this very definitely could have and would have been the next developed area had not first the city of Palo Alto purchased the large big area around, and then we purchased the inholding to the preserve.
So we went all the way up the hill. We're back down to street level. I must say, the peninsula is one of the richer counties in the Bay Area. Other counties, Alameda County, for example, a lot of redevelopment happening there along the waterfront. And, you know, one wonders, will they ever be able to succeed in open space preservation as you have here in the peninsula? Or does it really take, you know, rich folks donating?
We have a strong ethic of land conservation throughout the Bay Area, and that's best represented by the fact that not only are there land trusts in almost every county around the Bay, but there are also open space agency and or park districts all the way around the Bay. So, for example, in Alameda, they're part of the East Bay Regional Park District. And also that there is a Bay Area Open Space Council that's helping coordinate all those efforts as well. So actually, I would say as a region, we are very much, along with, say, Portland and some other areas, very much in the forefront of overall protection. So we need to be careful here as we're heading across.
What does this mean to you to stand here and look over all of this land that is now preserved? You know, it could have been something else.
It means everything to me, and it's why I've dedicated my life to this work, is because I think part of a healthy environment and community to live in includes both very vibrant urban areas and lovely protected rural areas like this. This is the difference between having clean air and water and not fighting over resources like so many places in the world, and creating the balance that so many places are looking for between, you know, what we want to see to have the benefit of a thriving economy, but also to have places to go, to retreat, to recreate, to find peace of mind, to have sources of clean water and clean air. And I think it's absolutely spectacular that we live in an area that's 7.5 million people, and we have some of the largest predators still alive and surrounding like this in this preserve. There are mountain lions in this preserve around
what?
Us. But to me, a sign of a healthy ecosystem is the fact that it can support an apex predator like that, and that it shows you how incredible it is that we've been able to protect so much of this land. It's like having your backyard be hundreds of thousands of acres.
That's Walter Moore, president of POST, the Peninsula Open Space Trust. So what open spaces are special to you in the Bay Area that you'd hate to see built up? Tell us on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this sound.
So some of the things that the judges are looking for are like a droopy tail, a severe underbite goes a long way.
We ask you what you think it is and where in the Bay Area it's from. For this week's answer, we sent KALW's Jen Sheehan and Louisa Beck to Petaluma, where this year the Sonoma Marin Fair celebrated its 75th anniversary.
My name is Claire Madison, and I'm from Forestville, Sonoma County. This is my modern game bantam, Joe. and he is 3 years old, and he's my showmanship bird. He is a really long-legged chicken, and he's a bantam, which means he's about like 1/4 the size of a regular chicken, and so he's kind of like a chicken on stilts, and he's black and white.
You guys ready?
The world's ugliest dog.
Look at this trophy.
So some of the things that the judges are looking for are like a droopy tail or maybe like a really dull, unruly coat, jutting jaw, sad sack eyes, or just weird eyes. A severe underbite goes a long way.
My name is Jason Wirtz, and I'm from Los Angeles, California, and that is Sweepy Rambo, the winner. We just took first place for the full-bred dogs. She is a hairless, and she has a mohawk. She has one eye, and she's blind, and she has no teeth. And she's 13, and she's beautiful.
Well, let's hear it for all the contestants with their wonderfully ugly dogs.
All righty, race fans, welcome to the Great American Speedway and our crazy little pig races. By a show of hands, how many of you guys have never seen pig racing before? Oh my goodness.
Critters, start your engines.
There's Scott and June. And they're up.
Got some good guesses on this one, including from today's winner, Libby Pope. Congratulations, Libby. We'll be sending you a KALW t-shirt. For everyone else, don't worry. You'll have another chance to guess next week. Want a sneak peek? Here it is.
Nice shot.
She has more powder in there, so it's going to go oomph.
So, do you know what that is and where we recorded it? Give us a call at 415-264-7106 and share your guess. And if you get it right, you might just win a KALW t-shirt. We'll reveal the answer on next Thursday's Cross Currents. And to hear more audiograph sounds, visit our website, kalw.org. Click on Cross Currents. And that does it for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Isabel Angel, Lawrence Chan, Ronnie Cohen, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Sandhya Dirks, Jeannie Dwan, Angela Johnston, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Rachel Vasquez. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Our line producer was Nina Gensler-Debs. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thank you. We are listener-supported public radio. You're listening to Bay Area band Vinyl. They perform this Saturday at the Boom Boom Room on Fillmore Street in San Francisco. Show starts at 9:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.